Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So it seems that just about everyone in Baltimore is obsessed with gnomes.
Yeah, it seems like Baltimore Orioles fans got gnome crazy over the weekend. As a matter of fact, they got gnome crazy on a Sunday night, Ray Atkinson.
When it was supposed to be a Saturday night, but the monsoon that we had on Saturday, where it seemed like the rain would never stop, and it was going up and down the East Coast. A funny story about that we'll tell you as the free-for-all goes on, but... Yes, Baltimore has gnome fever, and right now the Baltimore Orioles themselves are in fuego. They're not only en fuego, they're el fuego right now, because it just seems like they cannot lose a game.
Yep, they are on fire, and they are the fire that is taking place in Major League Baseball. As a matter of fact, when you look at the standings on, when you looked at the standings on the early morning of Monday, June 29th, 2015, It's just an incredible difference in how the Orioles just jumped up the ladder in the standings there. The Orioles went from being, 2.5 games back, 3 games back, to automatically, by percentage points, in first place of a very competitive American League East division.
And that's exactly what we've been saying the entire season, is how competitive the American League East is, and just how exactly on just a... The fate of the American League East can turn on a dime, and as of right now, the dime is in the Baltimore Orioles' court, but we don't know for how long, considering that, just about every team, minus Boston, is in it.
Yeah, I mean, even you can't count out Boston anyway, because they have the experience alone, but the difference in last place and first place in this division, Ray, is so thin, I don't even think you could cut it with a butter knife. I just think it's... You know, the difference is incredible.
And I do think that this is going to hold up throughout the entire season. You're going to be seeing multiple teams competing for the American League East. It isn't just going to be one team, and it might not even be clinched as early as it was last year. As we remember, it was pretty quickly that the Orioles clinched. You were counting down the magic number. I remember when it was Harold Baines, number 3. And then you had it to where last year they became American League East champions so quickly. I don't think that's going to be happening this year. I think it's going to come right down to the wire. It might even become to a one-game playoff to determine who's going to be the leader of the American League East. But hey, that's just my speculation. Wild, wild internet speculation here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can hear on sfmsports.net. Audio Boom is our audio host, along with Stitcher and Spreaker. Josh, what is our Facebook profile and Twitter?
Be sure to check us out on Facebook at the Baltimore Sports Free for All podcast. Also, you can follow us, retweet us, and check us out at B Sports Free, the number 4 all. And be sure to check out our blogs at sportsblog.com. This past weekend, I put up a post entitled, "Are the Baltimore Orioles for real?"
Well, they are. I mean,
Now they are.
You can touch them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have feelings.
And in that blog, I sort of wanted to throw in some pessimism in this sea of optimism that is going on there, because it wouldn't be sports without it. You can't have a good thing going on without addressing certain problems. For example, in the blog, I talked about, will Adam Jones be healthy enough in this long stretch? Remember, folks, he did have a bruised right shoulder and just got back into the lineup not too long ago.
And remember, folks, Nolan Reimold also had an Achilles problem this past week. So you're thinking to yourself, uh-oh, wait, you're gripping at the collar a little bit, saying to yourself, here we go again, Mr. Nolan Reimold, Mr. Injury-prone Nolan Reimold. But seems to be, so far, as of this podcast, he is okay and still in the lineup.
And as of this podcast, the Orioles are 41-34 through 75 games. And so by next week's episode, Ray, we'll be at the halfway point in the Major League Baseball season.
And I just cannot believe that it was just a few weeks ago we were talking about how this team couldn't get past the 3 games under 500 mark, and now they're 7 games over as of this podcast, and things are just looking so bright for the orange and black. I remember people were calling them a dumpster fire, and now there's more optimism and excitement more than ever. See, winning cures all ailments in sports, Josh. If you you're tired of a very vocal fan base, then just win. Just win, and you don't have to worry about the vocal fan base. They'll get behind you, and they'll be with you through thick and through thin, minus the football fans who all of a sudden converted over to baseball in 2012, who believe that one game in Major League Baseball is the equivalent of one game in the NFL, to where the NFL plays a 16-game season, while the MLB is 162 games, so the games don't really carry as much weight, but you wouldn't know that talking to a football fan who's recently converted to baseball.
I guess you could point out the statistic that you would find in the standings, last 10 games played. So if you had to say every 10 games in a Major League Baseball season is an equivalent to one game in the NFL season, okay, we can agree on that, but one game in baseball, one game in football does not make or break a season. Not in the very least.
Nope, and as of right now, yes, the Baltimore Orioles, first place in the American League East. They completed a doubleheader on Sunday against the Cleveland Indians, where, Josh, the Cleveland Indians didn't score a single run in either of those games.
Yeah, and before we get to those scores there, let's go down the week in review as far as the box scores are concerned for the Baltimore Orioles. Now, I believe we left off on Tuesday, June the 23rd. Yep, that's when they opened up a road series at Fenway Park.
You mean at Camden North?
At Camden North, excuse me. Thank you very much for correcting me there. Yep, the Orioles on June 23rd on a Tuesday defeated the Red Sox 6-4. Ubaldo Jimenez was your winner, going to 6-3. Kelly, the loser, 2-5. Britton collected his 20th save of the season. Then on Wednesday, June 24th, the Orioles lost 5-1 against the Red Sox. Buchholz was your winner, going to 5-6. Bud Norris, your boy Bud Norris, 2-6, the loser. By the way, Ray, correct me if I'm wrong, my eyes must be deceiving me, did I see a profile picture change from your girlfriend with Bud Norris?
I would say so. I mean, it wasn't really a profile picture change of just me and her. I remember it was just her solo in a picture, and now she's with Bud Norris. I mean, I can't hate on that. I mean, the woman was very excited to go to an Orioles game this past week. She went to two this past week, and now you had it to where Bud Norris, she finds him and says, hey, I want a picture with you. Okay, no problem.
You see, I told you folks, Ray and Bud's universes would collide eventually. Unfortunately, it had to involve his girlfriend.
Well, it was just one little picture.
I know, it's one little picture.
I highly doubt Bud Norris, who I believe is married.
Yeah, he is married.
Yeah,
is married.
Bud Norris would go after just a random girl from in the area.
I know. I just want to bust your chops on it. It's just so funny.
Yeah, highly unlikely. It's very highly unlikely, Josh. And no disrespect towards my girlfriend, but I doubt Bud Norris is very interested in her just because of, you know, he's a married man.
Yeah, but I don't think your girlfriend would go for a guy that's currently 2-6, could be 2-7 after this series against the Rangers. But, yeah, who knows? But
yeah, he was kind of on the up and up, and now it seems the last couple of starts he's kind of slipping a little bit back into that Bud Norris that we've grown to not so much like at the beginning of the season.
More to
loathe. Towards the end of the spring training. It seems like that Bud Norris is coming back. And just, you know, it makes me scratch my head is the fact that you had these young guys coming up in your pitching staff, and you saw where Bud Norris finally got hot, and you're just thinking to yourself, okay, well, now that he's hot, strike while the iron is hot, trade this guy. Trade him.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen, and they may have missed the boat on that one. They were given a little bit of a gift, and I guess nobody was really interested in Mr. Bud Norris.
Well, one pitcher I don't believe the Orioles will be trading anytime soon is one Miguel Gonzalez, who just made a return off of injury on the Thursday, June 25th game against the Red Sox, which was just an offensive slugging.
Yeah, he kind of got rocked a little bit.
Got rocked a little bit, but still collected a win there. 8-6, the Orioles won. Gonzalez improved to 6-4. Rodriguez was the loser, 3-2. Britton collected his 21st save of the season. And then we move on to the Cleveland series. Friday, June 26th against Cleveland.
A series or a massacre?
It was more... Well, actually, the first game was close. The other two, I'm sure Cleveland would want to forget about it. The Friday, June 26th game, the Orioles won 4-3. Darren O'Day, the one guy in the bullpen that just loves collecting wins more than lead holds or saves, improves to 5-0. Shepshinski was the loser, 1-3. Britton collected his 22nd save of the season. Now we move to Saturday, where nothing happened. It was more of a tsunami in Baltimore.
I mean, that game was the start time was 7:05. That game was postponed like right around 1:00.
And they were like, nope, not happening.
They're just like, nope, we're not getting a baseball game in today. There's no way that baseball is being played in this monsoon. It monsooned pretty consistently on Saturday, and it was monsooning so much that in Nationals Park, the outfield flooded.
Yeah, it was even raining so badly that my trip to Hershey, Pennsylvania was pretty much canceled there.
Yes, both wasn't pretty much canceled. We went up there and realized, wow, we made a terrible decision coming up here at this point. So we drove to Hershey, Pennsylvania just for a cheeseburger, a hot dog, and seeing Chocolate World. And then we got our rain checks and went our own separate way. So Hershey Park is going to have to wait another day here for the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, as Mother Nature had other plans. And we're just thinking to ourselves, wow, do we have to build ourselves an ark? Just the rain was just nonstop consistent, and even to the point where I was like, huh, haven't seen any tsunami downpours as of late. But then on the drive home at like around 3 o'clock, that's when they started coming down. And I was thinking to myself, oh boy, come on, stay dry, basement. Stay dry, basement. Stay everything. I don't need an ark to paddle through my way to get to my studio. Come on, please. And luckily it held up. But yeah, that Saturday was just a miserable day all around for just about everyone, because not only was it rainy, it was also cold, Josh.
I believe your vehicle is now a multi-eco vehicle. It can also go through torrential downpours.
There were a few times I went through standing water and I was like, huh. Yeah. Is it going to make it? I even felt like the resistance occasionally when I was trying to like speed up, and I'm thinking, yeah, I might get stuck in this. And I got through. I was like, okay. But there were some parts where I had to be detoured and turned around because the flooding was just too immense for any car to go through. There were even people stuck around in the southern Baltimore area, and it was just we've had some gnarly rainstorms here the last couple of years in Baltimore. Of course, we remember the one that was last year where it caused a street to collapse and caused a bunch of sinkholes here and through. But not sinking were the Baltimore Orioles on Sunday, as the rain delay paid no effect on their performance, as the first game was Ubaldo Jimenez, who pitched a shutout.
Eight shutout innings
for Ubaldo Jimenez. And not to be outdone, in the next game was Chris Tillman. Yes, Chris Tillman.
Seven shutout innings for Chris Tillman.
That we don't really call too often in terms of anything good here for this season, but it was Chris Tillman who decided, hey, if Ubaldo Jimenez can do it, I can do it, and therefore he did it. And it was seven shutout innings. The Orioles end up winning that game 8-0. One thing to note in this game, though, was left field and the competition that's going on right there between Travis Snyder, Delman Young, and Nolan Reimold. These guys are going back and forth between who wants to play that position. But on Sunday, in the late game, in the doubleheader, it was Travis Snyder who made an absolutely fantastic catch, just reaching out and just robbing the Cleveland hitter of a hit. And it was a sight to behold. Just look it up, because that is definitely a top 10 web gem on Baseball Tonight.
It's definitely on MLB's social media pages as well as their website as well. One of the highlight reel catches of the weekend in Major League Baseball play.
I was watching this game with my father, and I saw that he was talking about Travis Snyder's, like, yeah, Travis Snyder's the one guy on this team that just hasn't been impressing me. Lo and behold, the next play, boom, it was that web gem. And then he hits a home run earlier in the game. I say Travis Snyder had himself a hell of a Sunday.
Yeah, on that Sunday, who would have thought that you would have heard Travis Snyder, web gem, Chris Tillman, seven shutout innings all in one game? Who would have thought you would have heard such a thing?
Who would have thought that you would have seen a baseball team play two games in one day and not score a single run? That's bad times.
Those are bad times.
Those are hard times.
Those are hard times. Yes.
Rest in peace, Dusty Rhodes.
Oh my goodness gracious! That was so terrible. You remember at the end of that game, the Sunday night game, the second game of the doubleheader, Terry Francona came out and was arguing a call, and pretty much got ejected. And I feel like it looked like he was pleading with the umpire, please, can you just call balls for like the next 12 pitches so one of my guys scores a run? And I'm sure the umpire was somewhere along the lines of, no, Terry, you're going to sit here and you're going to watch your team get shut out twice. Although I'm sure he didn't say that, but I'm sure he was thinking that in the back of his head.
Yeah, this is why in lower leagues there's a slaughter rule, to where they kind of keep it from games getting out of hand just like this, when you know there's absolutely no chance of another team coming back and winning. But that could, in professional baseball, it's a different story, because we've seen 9 runs scored in the 9th inning one time. So anything is possible in Major League Baseball. But after the 7th inning, when Chris Tillman came out and he had a comfortable 8-0 cushion, you just knew that the Cleveland Indians were not capable of coming back, and therefore they suffered a loss, and they suffered a massacre sweep at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles this past weekend.
Now, my favorite part of the weekend review, the stats. Now, looking at the hitting stats there, your lead hitter from this past week
is once again
Mr. Bright Spot,
Jimmy Paredes.
500 batting average, 9 for 18 in 5 games played, 4 runs scored, 3 doubles, 1 home run, three runs batted in. I think it's safe to say now, in about 2 years, not only will this guy be talked about in Baltimore if he plays every day a designated hitter, but I think he'll be talked about in most of Major League Baseball circles.
Well, as of right now, he pretty much is, because people are looking at Jimmy Paredes in Baltimore, and he's a sight to behold. The one thing, though, is that's holding him back are the amount of at-bats that he gets, because one minute he's in the top 10 in stats, and the other minute he disappears because he doesn't have enough at-bats compared to everybody else. Now, there was a little blemish that he had this past week. He was caught stealing, Josh.
He was caught stealing, did not have a stolen base to his name there.
Well, that's the only thing I can really say about Jimmy Paredes, that you can, and you're really, really, really reaching at the bottom of the barrel at that point.
Sorry, Jimmy. Other guys that have hit well this week, Nolan Reimold was 2-for-5 in 3 games played, .400 batting average. Got a double as well. Steve Pierce went 3-for-8, had 2 doubles, also scored a run, hit .375. Ryan Flaherty, 6-for-17 in 6 games played, 1 run scored, 1 double, 5 runs batted in. I know people like to get on Ryan Flaherty, but most people don't realize this. He's a utility player. He's not an everyday guy. He is like a David Freese or a Dave Roberts.
Or Melvin Moore at the beginning of his career.
People need to take him off this pedestal and just accept the fact that he's just a solid every 2, every 3 days kind of guy.
And if he wasn't, Buck Showalter wouldn't be keeping him around as much as he does. I mean, Ryan Flaherty got 6 games action, 17 at-bats this week, and that was more than Steve Pierce. Manny Machado, Chris Davis, and Chris Parmalee, yeah, they've all rounded out this incredible hitting stretch the Orioles have
had. Each one with a home run.
Yeah, and Machado and Davis are both hitting over .300. Machado continues to be one of the hottest players in baseball right now, and people are talking about him as a potential MVP candidate if he keeps his numbers up. And, of course, if you think that if the Orioles were to have one All-Star representative, by the way, 2 more Kansas City Royals fell this week from the All-Star lead.
Somebody listened to our podcast.
Yes, so the numbers are dwindling for the Kansas City Royals. Manny Machado, though, is the one who's very impressive. I might just have to change my Josh Donaldson pick to him, just because I didn't think Manny Machado was going to keep up this hot streak that he's been on, but he's been on it now for a good 3 to 4 weeks.
I don't know. Josh Donaldson did have a Derek Jeter-like catch this past week and a Derek Jeter-like web jam.
They don't put web jams in considerations for stats.
Some fans want to see that in the field, though.
Yeah, but
remember when Torrey Hunter robbed Barry Bonds of a home run in all those years at the All-Star game?
Yeah, well,
people like seeing that.
That was in the All-Star game, but they didn't vote Torrey Hunter in because of, you know, the amount of web jams that he had in relation to everybody else. I mean, the web gem is just not really a stat that people would follow. Yeah, it gets you more exposure on SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight, but at the same time, it's not the right stat you want to look at in terms of determining all-star caliber players. And Manny Machado right now is an all-star caliber player. And if you think that the Orioles were to have one representative in the All-Star game, it's him. But there are other people that you would consider for the All-Star game. I would consider Adam Jones, if Adam Jones can really stay healthy. I would consider, if only he played earlier in the season, Jimmy Paredes.
I also think, too, as we're moving on to the pitcher side of things, you would have to consider Zach Britton.
Of course you would have to consider Zach Britton. The guy's got over 25 saves before the All-Star break, and getting the exact number for Zach Britton as in terms of how many.
Well, he's getting close to 25. He's at 22, I believe. But, yeah, you are right, though. He will pretty much be at 25 saves projectedly by the time the All-Star game comes around. Also, Ubaldo Jimenez, if he keeps picking up games, he may get a roster spot. I mean, it's certain. Who would have thought we would have said that, considering the year he had in 2014?
Yeah. I mean, thinking about the way he had it, and everyone was talking about, oh, well, you should have picked up Irvin Santana. You should have picked up Irvin Santana over Ubaldo Jimenez. Well, Irvin Santana, still suspended, while Ubaldo Jimenez is putting up numbers that you more expect from a guy that you're paying that kind of money to. And Ubaldo Jimenez, the guy that wasn't even on the playoff roster last year, that was moved to the bullpen in the latter parts of the season, is right now one of your best pitchers.
Yep, as we move along and check out some of the best from Orioles pitching in the week in review, Chris Tillman had, as we talked about earlier, did have the shutout performance in 7 innings pitched, gave up no base on balls, 6 strikeouts, 4 hits, and just rounded out his ERA down to the high fives, considering it was already in the mid-sixes. So it was a nice little performance there. Bud Norris, who had the loss this week, had 5 2/3 shutout innings Three strikeouts, one walk, one home run. Now, I know you're asking how does he have a 0-0 ERA after this week? Well, the Orioles were pretty bad on that Wednesday loss against the Red Sox. Bad that the errors pretty much made up for Bud Norris's ERA.
Yeah, pretty much. All four runs they were giving up there for Bud Norris were unearned. So
yeah,
Bud Norris got kind of like the shaft on that one. But at the same time, get him out there. 206 average he held to batters this past week. But as of right now, in terms of the Rangers series, not doing so hot.
No, not doing so hot at all. We'll get to him in just a bit. Brad Brock had a solid performance out of the bullpen, two lead holds and two shutout innings, two strikeouts, one walk, two hits allowed. So Brad Brock getting back on track along with Chaz Rowe, who also had 1 2/3 shutout innings this past week and another lead hold. The long relievers are sort of getting back to being the strength of this bullpen along with Darren O'Day, who didn't really have a solid week, had two innings pitched, gave up an earned run, but once again, Ray, just is that guy to be there for the Orioles when they need him the most and collect the victories. So it definitely is the bullpen is definitely the backbone of this pitching staff right now.
Including Darren O'Day, who kind of got a little bit hit around this past week.
Yeah.
Had a blown save that he had to deal with, but at the same time, yeah, blown save, got the victory.
Yep, and speaking of saves, Zach Britton picked up three saves in three games, had a gave up one earned run in three innings pitch, but had a comfortable lead, so you can afford to give up at least one earned run in it with a three-run lead for your team there. So Zach Britton definitely proving his all-star status.
Yes, keep it up, Zach Britton, because as a closer and you be considered for an all-star appearance,
yeah.
That's quite the accomplishment to put underneath your belt there, Mr. Britton.
Yeah, considering not too long ago, last season, the Orioles had to make a tough decision whether to bring him up to the major league roster because he didn't have any more options. Well, now that's no longer the case, considering Zach Britton has proven to be one of the best closers in all of Major League Baseball. Now, speaking of a pitcher who ERA-wise has been one of the best in Major League Baseball, Wei-Yan Chen got called back up to the Baltimore Orioles this week.
That lasted long, didn't it?
Yep, six innings pitched, two earned runs, seven hits allowed. Had five strikeouts, two walks, three ERA. I guess the performance you want to see out of Wei-Yan Chen, but I'm sure his agent Scott Boras still isn't happy with the situation New York has put him in.
He was like, hey, you sent him down. You want to like devalue his contract a little bit. That's not happening. I'm going to be negotiating to every penny of the law.
We got one more guy to talk about.
And who's that?
Ubaldo Jimenez. Two games started, two games won, 13 innings pitched, 10 hits allowed, three earned runs allowed. Three base on balls, 15 strikeouts, 2.08 earned run average. If that is not ace status there, Ray Atkinson, I don't know what is.
Yeah, he's a status quo right now. And as of right now, the Orioles have a three-game series up against the Texas Rangers. Four-game series, actually, as a matter of fact. If I'm looking at my big news window right now, yes, a four-game series against the Texas Rangers at Camden Yards. And then they travel to the Central to Chicago and the White Sox for a three-game weekend series. So how do you expect to see the Orioles stack up this week?
You know what? I feel like you can't be too high, you can't be too low. And I know I said last week I would be happy with a 4-2 week, and considering the Orioles ended the week in review at 5-1.
Which is what I predicted
last week. I'm going to say 4-3. You know, just because I feel like the Texas series will be tough, and if they get away with two home wins, even though it'll be a disappointment, you'll have to realize that Texas has been playing decent baseball in the AL West this year. An AL West division that actually is pretty competitive in their own right.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4-3 myself. I mean, I was right last week at 5-1, and I want to see.
And I was right the week before, so we're sort of hoping for a tie here.
So if we both are right this week, then it gives us a tie. And if we're both wrong this week, it still gives us a tie, and we got to still have somewhat of a tiebreaker. And that will be saved for the next edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
The 2011 FIFA Women's World Cup was a very dramatic one. The final was dramatic as Japan upended the U.S. in close fashion in overtime. Now, looking at the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup, it's not a completely different story there, Ray Atkinson. We're down to the Final Four now, and oh, guess what? The U.S. and Japan are in the Final Four, but here's a problem. They each have to win their games to get back to the final.
Yes, Japan has to play against England, and the United States is matching up against Germany on Tuesday. And I believe that is a better matchup, considering the fact that how much the French were just totally screwed out of a chance to get into the semifinal. But now it's the United States versus Germany, and since, you know, we're talking about United States versus Japan as a rematch in the finals of 2011, and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, that could happen, but they have to get through these two teams first. I mean, England and Germany are nothing to sneeze at, considering they've gotten this far. And it's just a testament that you see in Women's World Cup versus Men's World Cup. You see countries like Ghana and the men's and other African countries, whereas opposed in the women, you know, Women's World Cup, it's pretty much Japan, it's pretty much United States, England, Germany. It's countries that have adopted the at the earliest part that, you know, women can do stuff now.
Yeah, and you have to live with that. But getting to the round of 16 where the women started at the U.S. Women's National Team, they faced up against Colombia, who weren't really looking forward to the U.S. just walking all over them. Well, usually, and I hate to say this in most sports, but when a soccer team beats you 2-0, they pretty much walked over you. So,
yes,
yeah.
Two to nothing. 2-0.
Yeah, 2-0.
That's a high-scoring affair on that part. Now, listen, okay, soccer, football, whatever you want to call it.
It's football.
Football is one of the more athletic contests that you can compete in terms of, you know, sheer athletic ability.
And strategic, too.
It's a lot of running, it's a lot of strategy, and it's a lot of teamwork that's involved in professional football. I'm actually going to my first professional football match in late July.
Yeah, and as we looked at the score here, 2-0, looking at who scored, Alex Morgan scored the first goal for the United States with in the 53rd minute of play. Carly Lloyd scored the second goal for the U.S. on a penalty kick in the 66th minute of play. And looking at some notable mentions here, goalie Hope Solo collected two saves in that matchup as Colombia had 10 shots, 2 on the goal, as the United States had 15 shots, 6 on goal. And I guess you could say it's just like a law of averages. If the averages outweigh the opponent as far as shots on goals are concerned, especially when you have 4 more shots on goal, your chances of winning, especially 2-0, are going to be pretty good there, Ray.
That it is, and everybody's talking about Hope Solo in this Women's National World Cup,
yeah,
just considering for all the wrong reasons, and looking at her her domestic violence cases against her and the disorderly conduct she had with her husband against police, and figuring out that the outside the lines obtained records that showed that that she was very derogatory towards police and totally counteracted her statement and her redemption story. And everyone's like saying, well, maybe she shouldn't play in this, maybe she shouldn't play in this. And I mean, I'm not moral police. I'm not, you know, the Gestapo or the moral everybody, like everybody says, I'm so mad at somebody because they committed a felony and committed a crime and going against that. Like, I just don't know, because at the same time, it's Women's World Cup. It's not on the level of, let's say, the National Football League, to where you have that kind of a controversy for Ray Rice as opposed to Hope Solo, which, you know, kind of a double standard if you think about it, because why is everybody giving this much press to a Ray Rice and not giving much press to a national soccer team? And Hope Solo, who's the face of women's national soccer right now, she's this generation's Mia Hamm. And looking at what she means to the U.S. women's national team, I mean, there's not that big of an outrage as, let's say, the Ray Rice case was.
I don't know about comparing her to a Mia Hamm, saying she's the Mia Hamm of her sport. I think that title would go to an Alex Morgan or even longtime team member Abby Wambach. But I guess you could say she's the more notable face, given her play on the field and also, unfortunately, her indiscretions off the field. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be affecting her play, because as we went to the round of 8 where the U.S. faced off against China, as the U.S. won 1-0, Carly Lloyd scoring the only goal for the United States, the only goal of the game in the 51st minute of play. And once again, Hope Solo picking up two saves up against the Chinese. And looking at stats once again, Ray, the U.S. had more shots on goal than China. They had 2 more shots than China's 2, as U.S. had 4, China had 2. The United States had 17 shots total in that game, where China had 6. when you look at it on paper, I know 1-0 is close in soccer, but when the U.S. has taken way more shots, almost 3 times as more shots as China, it just seems like China should not have been in that round in the first place. I mean, it just at least defensively, they shouldn't have been in it.
Occasionally, you get in these tournaments teams that really had no business being there and shouldn't have been there that you want to say to yourself.
Like France, for example, probably should have been in there ahead of England, given the fact they lost 5-4 in dramatic fashion.
Yeah, like France could have been there and Germany. It's definitely a weird way this World Cup has been playing out, and it came at the wrong time, especially with the FIFA scandal going on, that you're saying to yourself, huh, well, if the U.S. wins this World Cup, is it going to be as ceremonious as it was in 1999, or is it going to be something that we will talk about for a couple weeks and then completely forget about it in the sunset due to everything that's been going on?
Now, Tuesday, June the 30th, the U.S. faces off against Germany. Now, Germany, like we mentioned earlier, they are a powerhouse along with England, along with Japan, who are also one of the Final Four as well. Germany is a powerhouse in their own right, and the United States is facing off against them in the round of four. Of course, the loser of this game, unfortunately, will go to the third-place matchup, and you certainly don't want to go to the third-place matchup in the World Cup, because all those years of training, all those years of hard work, just to end up in a third-place matchup, you certainly don't want to end up in that route, and I don't think the U.S. wants to do that. Now, I will make a prediction. I'm not going to predict who wins and who loses, but I guarantee you Hope Solo gives up a goal in this game. I just feel like 2 shutouts in a row, you're eventually due to give up to better competition defensively. However, I'll just go out and make this prediction right now. I think U.S. wins this game. It'll be close. I'll say it'll be high scoring. I'll say 4-3. I think Japan wins close against England. I'll say 1-0. And then I think U.S. faces off against Japan there. And as we get to the Sunday game, or actually not the Sunday game, and it would be the Sunday game, wouldn't it? Yeah, Sunday, as I'm looking at the world.
July 5th.
Yeah,
yes.
July 5th, yeah.
Considering the fact this week is the 4th of July,
yeah,
it's on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be the semifinal winners going up against each other there. And
yeah, so we got to give our predictions for the finals on this episode, shouldn't we? Because the next episode that we air, the World Cup's already going to be decided. So let's go with
U.S.-Japan.
U.S.-Japan. I'm going to say Japan.
Yeah. I'm going to say Japan, too, just because, I don't know. I think Hope Solo, who was also a goalie in the 2011 World Cup game, I think if her head isn't on straight, it may come back to haunt her, and even in the worst way.
And as you get closer and closer to that final, the more media comes to you, and they'll start bringing it up, and you got to think to yourself, huh, is this going to be a distraction, everything else that's going to come my way, and what's going to be the ramifications after the match and everything else that goes on? It's going to be pretty interesting to see how the U.S. women's national team handles Japan. I would have to say this to the women's team. Prove us wrong.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Time for a little education here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
What are we going to learn about today, Mr. Atkinson?
Listen, chump, we're going to learn about grid.
What's grid?
Grid is a sport that is involved with CrossFit, where you, as a competitor, as I've already messed this up, but you, as a competitor, will get in the grid to compete in a 2-hour match between 5 men and 5 women, one of each of those men and women being 40 years or older. And you get on the grid in the National Professional Grid League. And I've already really screwed this up.
Yeah.
Don't have me do promos live anymore. But I have to be in character and get into where I can do like a Hulk Hogan-type promo. But yes, we're talking about NPGL and grid. And what it is exactly that you see is an up-and-coming sport. It began in 2014. The DC Brawlers. Yes, the DC Brawlers. Down the street, which was the local team at the time, they were the champions of the inaugural year for the NPGL. But now you have the Baltimore Anthem beginning their inaugural season here, and it is now 2015, their second year, and you've got a league of 8 different teams that we're going to be talking about here, and some of the names are just amazing, like the New York Rhinos. I remember creating a team in Madden that I would always like make the Rhinos, just because I think any type of sports team should be called the Rhinos, and there just aren't that many teams out there that are named the Rhinos. But now you have the New York Rhinos, and yes, you've got some local town on the Rhinos, but you've also got, for the Baltimore Anthem, the first round pick that they've ever did in their draft. They had an expansion draft. Their first pick that they did was a woman out of Hanover, Kristen Wagner.
Yeah, and if you want any information about the Baltimore Anthem, you can always go to npgl.com, where they will have the list of teams there for you to check out there. For example, the Baltimore Anthem. You also have the Phoenix Rise, the New York Rhinos, and also another cool logo, the Miami Surge. And by the way, former Pro Bowl Ravens running back Willis McGahee, a member of the Miami Surge. So it's not just I know when you think about National Pro Grid League, you're thinking, oh, these are people that are religious to the CrossFit lifestyle and everything. Well, it's not a CrossFit sort of lifestyle. These people are pretty much trained well enough to be professional athletes themselves.
Yeah, Kristen Wagner, former Marine.
Yeah, exactly. Or even served in the military at some point in time in their life.
The Anthem have a Russian, Klokov, who was a former Olympic weightlifter.
Yeah, you have a lot of people on the team there who have plenty of experience there. Eddie Zuckier from Toronto, Ontario. John Bostic of North Carolina. Garrett Smith, by the way, the lead coach of that team there, the Baltimore Anthem. Also, Pip Malone of Australia. You also have Tracy Chloe's of Leesburg, Virginia.
So many diverse locations.
Absolutely. Lori Thornton of Colorado Springs, Colorado. You mentioned Dmitry Klokov of Moscow, Russia. Also,
Russia.
Igo Zaripov of Las Vegas, Nevada. And yeah, you have a whole array of people from different backgrounds, different countries who are participating for the Baltimore Anthem here. And I know, you know, you have people saying, well, yeah, we get it. They're athletes and everything. Are there competitions? Well, yeah, there are.
That's what Grid is. It's a competition.
Not only are they competitions, but they are also televised on NBC Sports Network. By the way, the same network that will no longer be doing work with a current presidential candidate. But that's another time down the road.
A quote-unquote presidential candidate, because I think he's got a snowball's chance in hell, considering his views are very extreme.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at also, when I was watching Grid last year and was looking at the DC Brawlers, because, yeah, they were the local team at the time, I couldn't help but notice this one woman on the team, Taylor Stallings, who was stronger than about 95% of the men that I know. Here's a woman who's 5'3", 160 pounds, and the form that this woman exhibits when she lifts is just amazing. The form that everybody uses is something that you'll just be hypnotized. It's almost hypnotizing looking at the way these people lift and the way they compete with body weight exercises and lifting and everything else that they do in a two-hour event. And it's a co-ed sport that is nationally televised. And you're talking about guys and women who go to a full-time job after they're done with this, because that's just what Grid is. It's just normal people that would live out their lives to become, you know, on the side competitors in Grid, because Grid right now, I wouldn't say pays the bills. It might in time, considering it's still a fast and up-and-coming sport. I mean, come on. This is their second year. They've already got a national television deal. Their events are streamed live on their website that you can check out on mpgl.com. And everything else that's been going on, they even got a former professional football player in Willis McGahee. And you're seeing, you know, former athletes and former people trained in something. They're done with that. Now they want to move on to something else. MPGL is actually something to watch and something that everybody can get behind, because, yeah, you've got five men and five women competing at a time, and two of those have to be over the age of 40.
Absolutely. And not to mention, though, as you look at pics on the MPGL website, you'll see pictures of the Baltimore Anthem competing in these contests, doing a weightlifting contest here. And there are two men for each lift there, as well as two women. And, yeah, you can look at it. They're wearing weightlifting belts. They are playing it safe, because you're going to have somebody spotting, because the last thing you want to see is somebody going at it solo and injuring themselves. Then again, you could go to any gym, and if you play it that way, you're more than likely to get hurt if you play it solo.
They don't work out of gyms, Josh. They work out of boxes, is what they're called.
Yeah.
get your lingo right.
I'm talking about people like you and me that would go to gyms, not MPGL athletes that go to boxes.
Yeah, so this is something that we're going to be talking about here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, because, after all, we are the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, and Baltimore Anthem is a new team here in Baltimore. We're quite excited about it.
Absolutely. Looking at their first matchup this year, they competed on June the 14th against the New York Rhinos. Unfortunately, the Baltimore Anthem came up short 21-15. Now, just like me and Ray, you can always check out mpgl.com and check out the rules and the formats and how everything is ran. I'll give you a hint. There were 11 races in this matchup. Each race, teams were given a certain amount of points. For example, in the first race, the Anthem came away and scored 2 points where the Rhinos scored one. And, of course, the Anthem scored 2 points in the next race. Rhinos scored one. And then in the later races, the Rhinos started gaining ground. And by the 11th race, the Rhinos scored 4 points. The Anthem scored 1 point. And that's pretty much the systems, the point system, I should say, of MPGL Athletics and the races there. And if you want to watch the matchup there, if you want to see it for yourself, there is a replay on NBC Sports Network, which will take place on July 14th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So be sure to check that out on television and sort of educate yourself as well, because from what I've seen in videos and photos, these athletes, they're for real.
Yeah, and you would have to check it out either live right then and there or wait for the tape delay on NBC Sports Network, because it takes a while for them to archive the actual matches on MPGL as of right now. Like I said, it's a young and fledging sport. It's trying to find its way, trying to find a consistency in terms of when it can compete and when it can be televised and everything that's been going on. But so far, so good for MPGL, and we look forward to covering them in the future. So, in the future, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. What are we talking about next week?
Hopefully, we're talking about the women's national team for the United States bringing home the coveted World Cup trophy, thus culminating what was a, dare I say, what, 17-year exodus from their last one?
Yeah, we
where,
can say that.
Mia Hamm took the shirt off and
celebrated. That was a Mia Hamm.
That was a Mia Hamm? Who was that?
No, I'm blanking on her name right now.
I know who you're talking about.
She was blonde. I forgot her name.
We'll bring her up next week. Orioles, hopefully they grab at least 4 wins, maybe 5 wins this week, improve that win total, and thus some projected wins. Also, by the way, All-Stars for the MLB teams will be announced after this weekend. So
hopefully we're talking about more than one.
Hopefully we're talking about three or more. I mean, you can make a case for three or more. Maybe some Ravens talk?
No.
Maybe?
No.
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 We have to wait one more month before we start talking Ravens again.
Pretty much, and even then it's going to be, it's preseason, tell me who wins.
Oh, jeez. All right, so let's wrap it up right now, Ray.
Yes, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I am Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.